Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. This is L.A. Steele. I just noticed that it says I'm not streaming, but the last time that happened, turned out the show was on fine, and there was a Blog Talk problem. Sign doesn't go down. I don't know why. So we're going to try, anyway, tonight to work with it. I'm opening up the chat room, and anybody's out there who'd like to listen, please join. You can hear me. Appreciate it. Anyway. I'm going to continue our program tonight with the we had originally started with, and that was the I'm going to finish where we started last week in doing the program that on courage. I will finish that off tonight. There were some new revelations that, as I read the book further, I was most, I was very, very surprised, very, very, I'm not sure how I can explain this. It was more of a, as much of a revelation as just a, also a confirmation of what I tend to have believed all along. I'm just writing in here that contin. Courage to Be is the name of the book.
Calvin
said the unimaginable horror. And a human mind is a permanent factory of idols, and a permanent factory of fears. And then Luther also called it the naked absolute, or the naked anxiety. The anxiety of fate and death, the loss of existence, the state of non-being. And courage has to be created through many internal and external activities and symbols, psychological and ritual, without fear of death, or superior law or enemy have no effects. A man needs courage to overcome the great anxiety of death. Man fears his fate and his death. These are the great fears. Also, there's the anxiety of emptiness and meaninglessness. One must participate meaningfully in their original creations, which is that's what we're hoping for. And we've talked about this on other shows in the concept of universal, our unity consciousness, what we're gathering or what we're going toward in the seventh day of the galactic period, or the first day of the, soon to be the first day of the the seventh day, the seventh day of the first of universal consciousness, the entering into universal consciousness. And we talk about this in regards to, or I do, I talk about this in regards to the in regards to the Mayan prophecy and the ascension of mankind to the fourth dimension, fourth dimensional consciousness. And if we can relate the two, which I believe we can, they are the same thing. It's an elevation of consciousness which creates an elevation of courage. Since knowledge gives us courage, faith gives us courage, hope gives us courage, and all of the other things that when we have these, these illusions, not delusions, but illusions, I believe, and they're things that we create in our minds and hope that they can be achieved in our lifetime. I hope that we have the benefit of them, courage and wisdom, integrity, all of the virtues that man espouses, to. And I think we're there. I think we're seeing it. It's peaking in our mind's eye. I think we're starting to crystallize. And I see this more so in the as I started to read this book and understand man's historical quest for the answer, for what truth means, and why we need it, why we need courage, and what courage is. And anxiety of emptiness and meaninglessness, it says one must participate meaningfully in their original creations. What we love actualizes through us, and spiritual self-affirmation. That's basically what we're doing here tonight. My need to express this, what I've seen, because I feel that there's a great need for it out there, for someone listening, who has been on this quest their whole life as to what truth and courage and faith and so on are. Well, what we love actualizes through us. It's a spiritual self-affirmation. And this presupposes that spiritual life is taken seriously. It is a matter of ultimate concern and thought it, or rather through it, and in it, reality becomes manifest. Without spiritual laws, all is meaningless and emptiness. I sense that to be true. Meaninglessness is an anxiety about the loss of the ultimate concern of a meaning that which gives meaning to all meanings by loss of a spiritual center. We can lose this. That's what meaninglessness is. We lost our spiritual center, and we have problems and can't we seek the solution to it. But that solution is really when you find your spiritual center again. Tillich quotes, "He escapes from his freedom in order to escape the anxiety of meaninglessness. In order to avoid the risk of asking and doubting, he surrenders the right to ask or doubt. He surrenders himself in order to save his spiritual life." So it's like, don't ask, don't tell. Don't ask. Don't ask the questions. They don't want to know. You just ignore. And that's not the way to do it, but that's what we wind up doing. And meaning is saved, but the self is sacrificed. When we do something like that, we can deny and insist on some meaning. But when we do that, the self is sacrificed. And it leaves a fanatical self-assertiveness. Fanaticism is the correlate to spiritual self-surrender. It shows the anxiety which was supposed to conquer by attacking with disproportionate violence those who disagree and demonstrate by their disagreement elements in the spiritual life of the fanatic, which we must suppress in himself. He must suppress it in others. So, in other words, if he's delusional, if the person is denying and perhaps becomes a devout Catholic or devout Muslim or devout this or devout that, devout Democrat, devout progressive, devout Republican, devout Tea Party, devout whatever they devout want to be, then what happens is they give up part of themselves. You give up part of your identity. And part of your freedom and part of your soul to this movement. And it's a very dangerous thing because you're surrendering that self to this cause, and that cause is made up of people that you don't know, people you can't trust, people that you know very little about and whose motives and whatnot are. So it takes as much time to research and feel comfortable about that than it does to just surrender yourself to them. To the cause, to the religion, or to the political party. His anxiety forces him to persecute dissenters. The fanatic's weakness is those who he fights and have a secret hold on him, and to this weakness he, his group, finally succumb. It's kind of like if you look at the, I call it the cult of conservatives. And there's a cult of liberals, too. It's kind of a cliquish group of people that seem to be able to direct the number of other people and in masses to create movements, if you will, political and religious movements. So these people that are in charge are the people, or the cultists, if you will, those that have taken and used the part that their followers have given up to create their power over them. And a threat to one's spiritual being is a threat to one's well-being. So any threat to a spiritual being, to our spirits, is a threat to our whole. You can't have one without the other. You can't threaten one without threatening the rest. It comes as a package, body and soul. And those are some of the first notes that I took on from this book. It's covered the first few 20 or 30 pages maybe or so. The rest is after man's spiritual physical being is given and demanded of him. What have you made of yourself? And must he must answer it. He is ultimately the judge who stands against him. This produces the anxiety of guilt, and in absolute terms, the anxiety of self-rejection or condemnation. Man is a finite being, is finite freedom, rather. So, in other words, our spiritual and physical being is demanded of us and together. And what have you made of yourself is the judgment that we cast each day. I mean, and he must answer it. You answer that every day if you're not happy with yourself. He is ultimately the judge. That's us. We are ultimately the judge who stands against us, ourselves. And this produces the anxiety of guilt in absolute terms, and the anxiety of self-rejection or condemnation. And man is finite freedom. Man has the power to act against his destiny, contradicting his essential being, of losing his destiny, creating an estrangement of himself. Good and evil permeate every day, or rather everything he does, and it lends to a complete self-rejection, feeling condemned to the despair of having lost our destiny. To avoid this extreme despair, we transform the anxiety of and guilt into moral action. Regardless of its imperfection and ambiguity, produces moral despair. No exit drives radical skepticism to suicide. No exit drives radical skepticism to suicide. All human life is an attempt to avoid despair. And despair can interpret existence as a whole. Now, guilt is the pollution of the soul by the material realm or by demonic powers. Desert, or a night of the soul, are frequent among mystics, and guilt remained dominant. Periods of great changes make all methods obsolete. Conflicts between the old, which tried to maintain itself often with new meaning, with new means, and new, which deprives the old of its intrinsic power and produces anxiety in all directions. Now, the incredible thing there is that, you know, again, we create new things that destroy the old, and we're constantly challenging our own belief systems with the knowledge and that we have the new knowledge that we acquire, and the new skepticism, which is healthy skepticism, but that leads to the deterioration of our established thoughts and virtues and vices and whatnot. What might have been a vice to us may have actually led us to discovery of that element of ourselves, which we must overcome, addictions or prejudices or intolerances that create the anger, confusion, and despair within us that we must avoid. And by fighting those demonic powers, if you will, of selfishness and ignorance, we must overcome those in ourselves, identify them first that they are, and then overcome them with courage and commitment and strength in resolving those issues that are deleting or depleting our energies, depleting our disintegrating our visions of the future,
And until we do that, until we grab hold of those fears and shake them and beat them and beat on them and get rid of them from our lives, then ignore, you know, you can't ignore them because they're there. It's only a form of regression if you ignore, but facing reality, either we do still have to have the power as individuals to ignore and reject false teachings or what is not true to us, fanaticism, groupthink, mind control. We have the power to overcome those things. It's quite simple. We just block them out from our minds. We do that all the time. We do it to all kinds of things, phenomena, threats, and so on. It's our mechanism of survival. But sometimes these anxieties appear, and they reappear in different forms, and they take over, and we have to be prepared to meet them in different forms, like they're shapeshifters of sorts, that it's the same anxiety, but with another face, the fear of public speaking, the fear of poverty, the fear of sickness, the fear of, all of these things, the fear of rejection, the fear of failure. These are all the deadly fears that we have, and we face them with courage and resolve and commitment to overcoming them. But at the same time, we have to be careful that we are replacing them properly, or not replacing them properly. We're replacing them with vice, or replacing these fears with confusing and as I unclear metaphysical metaphors, we have to be more clear as to where we're going and what we're pursuing and why we're pursuing it, and if it gives us peace, and if it gives us individual freedom, and if it gives us the ability to carry on through the day and through the week and through the year to come with grand ideas of betterment and success and, a closer unity to a God consciousness. These are the moving factors that should be steadfast in our lives. Unfortunately, they're not. And, that's when we fail. But the courage to be is the spirit that all men have. That dwells outside of their bodies, outside of themselves, and it actually guides us in our own ways, to our destinies. Those who achieve the greatest heights of achievement, I believe, are those who allow themselves to stretch out, to escape the confines of conventional thought, conventional religions, conventional politics, conventional lives, conventional aspirations and goals. These things are all controlled and manipulated by materialism and by society and by all of those who we've given our power to and said, here, direct our lives, keep us safe, keep us informed, protect us. But they don't do that. Instead, they steal from us and they cheat and they lie to us and they all to protect their own power and their secrets and to manipulate us and steal from the taxpayers and create empires that are wrongfully gotten and killings and genocides and wars that are intolerable and beyond cruel and beyond humane. And these are the issues that people of courage must face. They must face this and make the decision that they will no longer support this kind of concepts, these kinds of thoughts, in the proper perspectives of historical perspectives as well as future perspectives. These questions, these issues that come to the forefront must be one of abolishing conflict and war, must be abolishing violent war. These things are crucial to the survival of humanity. We cannot go on any longer fighting with each other in horrible bloodshed and cruelty and bringing out the worst of mankind, and the worst of mankind's suffering. So, when we deliberate on the origins of courage, then we have to understand that it is an evolving power within us, and one that we can ask for greater power. Many people don't even realize that they have that power to ask for more power. Because essentially you're asking yourself. It's like putting, it's no different than having a surge button on your vacuum cleaner, you know. You need more power, or having a low gear, so you can tow things, or, you can, in your car, or your tractor, or your motorcycle, or whatever you need, wherever you need the greater amount of power, you have it available to you. And that's what we have when we call upon the Spirit, or call upon the Great Spirit that guides all mankind. That we can expect an infusion, if you will, of courage, an infusion of power to the soul to overcome obstacles that we face. And the pathway to overcoming them, the proper pathway without guilt or shame, is the moral and ethical and courageous method, okay, if you will, the courageous method, the most courageous and powerful and virtuous method to overcome an obstacle, even though that obstacle may be one of violence or war or hatred or race or, tension or whatever it may be. I don't have it. I'm extremely empowered, like so many people. I mean, but at the same time, I take it upon myself, and the shame that goes with it, that if I fail to be tolerant, then that comes back to me. The anger comes back to me in ways that are not as pleasant, either through humiliation or through threats or through dislike or misunderstanding. These are all things that that come into play if we do not take the right road and make the right decision based on courage, based on strength, based on fact, knowledge, based on wisdom. These are how we make our decisions, or try to make our decisions. Too many people make their decisions based on emotional reactions to things and knee-jerk reactions to insult or injury. or to difficult problems that need to be faced that for some reason one cannot face. Because it exposes the self, it exposes the soul, it exposes the truth of who you are and what you are. These are the elements that we all must consider when making decisions. For instance, I have this book that's coming out very soon. I'm hoping it'll be this month. Printers will finally be able to accept all my corrections. But what we're facing now is far greater than what I'm facing right now is far greater than anything I think I've ever done, in that I have put so much of myself in this book. I've written it for the last 5 years. It's a compilation of essays and chapters and people and places and things, ideas and concepts, and based upon current events and current and historical events as they happen, and interviews with other brilliant people. And I've come to the understanding that perhaps the hardest thing one can do is to compile all of this information into a readable format. Depending upon all your skills of communication, all your writing skills and punctuation skills and spelling skills and organizational skills and, you know, everything that you've ever, all your computer skills and everything that you have ever learned, some form or another.
Right. accomplishment. It's a matter of fulfilling your goal. It's a matter of future, building your future, and creating a form of manifesto, if you will, of what you believe and why you believe it, so that others will read it and can identify with it or you know, throw it out. But I believe that much of our everything that I've said has come to pass. I've been proven correct in my assumptions, and based on the information that I've collected in on all of these topics, I believe I've clarified much of what I've seen. As I get into these satirical elements of my work, of my writing, which the reader will note in the book, I have a whole segment in the book entitled Satire, and that is devoted to satire that I've written, mostly political, you know, political satire. But at this point, or at this juncture of the book, where I'm just at the final comma, you know, deleting the final unnecessary word again, or making the aesthetic corrections that will finalize the book. I find that I've met a crossroad here of who I am personally as Leo and who I am as L.A. Steele, and through this book, am I creating a brand, or am I just clarifying who I am? And the dichotomy, if you will, or the sense of almost the bipolar sense, if you will, of personality. That goes into the creation of L.A. Steele and goes into the creation of Leo, are one and the same. And I try to note that as an autobiographical graphical novel, you know, these are the limitations that I'm working under, and you know, you just hope that they succeed. I believe they have, and I'm putting everything out there to doing it and investing in it myself to great amounts of time, personal money and everything to ensure that at least I can be proud of what I put out there and people will read it and invest the money in buying it and enjoying it and getting much from it and discussing it with their friends and possibly looking up into the sky, the chemtrail, or being more aware when they listen to a speech, a political speech, or being something that I've said might raise the question in their minds and fuel more investigation. So these are the many reasons. Plus, putting my words into writing and is a form of commitment to what I say, and that is essentially the element of combustion, if you will. That's the catalyst of doing it all. Thus the name Naked at the Mic, the survival of a liberal in a time of peril, where I even created the copy, the graphics for the cover. I think they're quite relevant. I think they're quite bold, and they're quite the statement. So, based on that, courage is self-affirmation, in spite of a non-being. So, I'm looking at this possibility that my book might be a complete bomb. Okay, there may be death literature, as we know it's. or maybe the end of my own confidence as a writer. But at the same time, it takes the courage and the ambition and the self-affirmation to be able to put this out and as a statement of a self-centered individual. And I mean self-centered, not in the extreme jealous nature or the selfish nature, but in the self-centered aspect of knowing who we are, or knowing who I am, respecting that about me and encouraging the better part of me to take over my life and enhance and the wisdom that I might have, the knowledge that I've accumulated over time. Putting into this book will encourage and help others to seek their truths and with the truths that I've uncovered and be able to experience, but be able to benefit from the experiences of my past and the enlightenment of any insights of others that I've learned about that I mentioned in the book. So, periods of great changes make all methods obsolete. This is correct. This is from the book Courage to Be. Conflicts between the old, which tries to maintain itself often with new means and with new, and the new, which deprives the old of its intrinsic power, reduces anxiety in all directions. Traditional order and institutions allow people to be bound within a protective system of courage by participation. He is not free of anxieties, but overcomes them with well-known methods. In periods of great change, these methods no longer work. Non-being has a double face in this situation. Horror of being trapped and annihilating openness of the infinite, where one falls without a place to fall. In other words, jumping into the black void of uncertainty. Instead, what we do is we accept the religious concepts that we've been taught as children as boundaries for our thought, as foundations for our future, and for our establishing premise to the ideals that we cherish. But when we find out that those pillars are eroding, and may collapse, part of our structure is collapsing, and we don't know why. And it's because those pillars are no longer strong. There's holes in them. There's weakness in them that came about from the from time, from our evolving and changing, and seeing things for more or less what they are, based upon the ideals that we so cherished. As the world paid lip service to these pillars, and have they just merely denied the existence of all things wrong and continue to just, you know, boil over and roll over. But today most people face both the horror of being trapped and the openness of the annihilating openness of infinite, where one keeps falling. So it's like, and it causes great anxiety. And anxiety is caused by forces of imaginary world conflicting with the real world. And trends toward greatness and perfection and one's soullessness and imperfection. It's like an American Idol contestant who has absolutely no talent. But only a belief in he wants to be a star. And, you know, these are, they can be, if they have the talent, if they worked hard enough, or they've been inspired by whatever, and like Susan Boyle or all the other discoveries, Pol Pot, the great singers that, have been beaten down because of their looks or because of their self-effacedness and their natural humility, but who have these voices that, seem to carry messages from God. They're just so perfect. So, and they've had the faith and the tenacity to continue until they've found the truest voices. And because of that, the world responds. The world always responds to a true voice. Sooner or later, they may argue with it, they may contend with it, they may find it very unattractive at first, but when it's truth, or if it's true voice, that the truth haunts one, it haunts us daily, and falseness haunts us daily, a lie, an abuse, indifference. A notable indifference, or an obvious indifference, or ignorance, one that we prefer to stay ignorant of, will haunt us. Say, well, I should probably know more about that person, or about that thing, or about that before I buy it, or I should know more of what I'm doing before I take it, because you may not really want it in the end. It may cause you more harm than good by having it. So these are things that we must consider making decisions toward our future or facing obstacles in our path now. And it says courage cannot conquer anxiety. Anxiety must be converted into fear in order to be overcome. So anxiety is more of an irrational fear. If we can rationalize it and say, okay, I'm afraid of death, I'm afraid of the law, I'm afraid of I'm afraid of getting hurt, or I'm afraid of rejection, or I'm afraid of whatever the fear might be, then we can understand it, and we can either act upon it to prevent, to suppress the fear, rid ourselves of fear, or we can act with it and avoid all not conflict, but all introduction to those areas that we fear the most. We don't want to face them, so we try to avoid them in whatever way we can. And, that's just a natural thing that we do. But we have to understand that that's one of our weaknesses. And courage cannot conquer anxiety. Anxiety must be converted into fear. Now, courage is self-affirmation. In other words, in spite of the anxiety, in spite of facing non-being, and courage resists despair by taking anxiety into itself. Then neurosis is the way of avoiding non-being by avoiding being. And we all have, these neuroses, or, we make the sign of our cross, or when we have thoughts or prayers or hope for blessings, we wear talisman or good luck charms. We created the universe. We act out. We develop compulsions where we have to wash our hands 25, 30 times a day. We have to brush our teeth till they bleed. We have to scrub our skin for cleanliness with abrasives. We have to just do all these things to avoid what it is that we fear the most, which is ourselves, something ourselves that we can't express or we can't face. And whatever that is, a shame or a neglect or ignorance or whatever it may be, rather than face that and face the problem and overcome that problem through whatever means is available, we prefer to deny that problem exists and go on and try to medicate it or, you know, overeat, oversleep, over-medicate, or simply over-ignore and fall into the hole, you know. So these are things that we have to avoid, neuroses. And let's see. To avoid this extreme despair, we must transfer the anxiety of guilt into moral action, regardless of its imperfection and ambiguity. Reduces moral despair. Unless we do that, unless we transform our anxieties and guilt into moral actions to counteract the immoral aspect of that, of those actions, original thoughts, if you will, regardless of its imperfection or ambiguity, regardless of how it looks or feels to you, as long as it's morally and ethically based in those sound fundamentals, virtues, then it can't go wrong. It can't go wrong. It'll be understood. Because that's how we as human beings understand. We understand kindness. We understand genius. We understand inspiration. We understand the words of God. We understand the words of man. We understand the words of children. And we know what these things mean. So we have to incorporate them into making the decisions that we make that offset the negativity in our lives and thus allow us to pursue greater and more noble existences. And no exit drives radical skepticism to suicide. All human lives is an attempt to avoid despair. Despair can't interrupt existence as a whole. So, and guilt is the pollution the soul by the pollution of the soul by the material realm of demonic powers. In other words, you know, our desires and our lusts for desires for sexual or whatever other desire or avarice or, you know, aversion, addictions, whatever they may be. These are things that we must overcome. And we can only overcome them through courage and faith that we can overcome them by battling them daily, demons. And finally, then the let's see if I have another page here. Yeah. Paul Tillich talks about fascism and Nazism. Had transformed the theoretia, the emphasis of vitality, into a political system which attacked most of the values of the Western world. Vitality equals the power of life, and intentionality equals the relations to meanings and makes man the most vital of beings. So if we create that national vitality that was popular under Nazism, then we're actually creating an entire being of one nation, okay, with drive and so on and so forth. And volatility is the power of creating beyond oneself, without losing oneself. And only man has complete vitality because he alone has complete intentionality. So whatever your intentions are, there so is your vitality. If your intentions are good and promising and world-building and peace-building and whatever, wealth-building or whatever it may be, that's where your vitality will be mostly spent, will be there, your intentions, completing those intentions. And intentionality
being connected toward meaningful contents. Man lives in his meanings. Man lives in meanings, which is brilliant. And the most vital being is the being who has the word and is liberated from bondage to the given. So in other words, is a free person, has free word, who believes in the word, who believes in the freedom. And the word spirit was lost and replaced by mind or intellect, and the elements of vitality presenting in spirit was separated and interpreted as an independent biological force. In man, nothing is merely biological or merely spiritual. Every cell of his being participates in his freedom and spirituality, and every act of his spiritual creativity is nourished by his vital dynamic. The ancient world believed courage is noble. Virtue designates the quality of those who unite masculine strength, or virtus, with moral nobility. And biological argument falls short of what classical antiquity called courage. And the final minute here that I have or so, self-affirmation and courage to be is a matter of fate. Courage, religiously speaking, is a matter of grace. Man is the microcosm to whom all cosmic forces are potentially present, and who participates in all spheres and strata of the universe. Through him, the universe continues the creative process which first has produced him as the aim and center of the creation. And that is basically what I'm going to end with tonight. There was, and that and the last, I wanted to go to the very last statement made in this book, which I will end this show with tonight. Have another minute. He says, beyond it is mere non-being. Within it, all forms of courage are reestablished in the power of God above the God of theism. The courage to be is rooted in the God who appears when God has disappeared in the anxiety of doubt. And that is what this means. That's the main essential meaning of the book, is that there is a God above all gods, that we petty gods, demigods. When we finally run the course, and we're finally at the end of our lives, the end of our sanity, and we face the great abyss and falling in even, at that moment is when the God, one God, takes over and saves us from ourselves. Because then we realize that we aren't falling. We only thought we were falling. Because we're falling nowhere, I mean, into nothing. But that nothing was created by God, the one God. So that if we fall, we'll still find him. We find him at the bottom of our fall. As we create that bottom, we create that floor and the ceiling. And it's to us. It may be dark, but we create the light as well. And that's how we exist. So courage is found in creating light, creating the truth, finding the truth, finding the light, and believing that the light is in the center of our souls. It has never gone out and never can go out. It will always be there when we need it. And that's the courage, and the courage to be. And I thank everybody for listening, and you can join us. Please join us tomorrow night when we speak with Lila. Lila will be with me, and we'll be talking to George Dixon and carrying on our conversation on the esoteric schools and possibly the mind calendar and a number of different issues that are facing us today from a metaphysical point of view. And I wish you good night. Thanks for joining.